Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's just about enough of that. That's my extremely attractive audio engineer showing her never-ending dedication and enthusiasm for the career of... No, it's yours, my dear. It's not mine. It's yours. Admit it. All right, now let me... Can I get to the news? Patriots owner Robert Kraft said last Wednesday that Tim Tebow's faith-based makeup was a factor in deciding to bring the quarterback into the Patriots' fold. That's right. He said, Tim's a winner, and that spirituality is so important to him, it's very appealing to me. He says, for me personally, having Tim Tebow on this team, he's someone who believes in spirituality. He's very competitive. He works hard, and he has a great attitude. You can't have enough good people around you, and Tebow has an added dimension of spirituality being so important to him, and that personally appeals to me a lot, says Robert Kraft. He says, you can't get enough good people like him. He told USA Today, quote, life is about collecting good people around you. You can't have enough good people, said Robert Kraft. Wow, that's pretty deep. That's pretty deep. I kind of like this guy. I never even knew who he was. I learned of Robert Kraft's identity when he signed Tim Tebow to a no-guaranteed money contract. I don't know what that means. That means basically they came and said, Tim, you can either go ahead with the fried chicken franchise, or you can come and play with us, and if you make the team, we might even pay you. So Tim might be giving kickbacks at the moment to the Patriots just to get a chance to get on the team, but we're very thankful. We have a reason now to stop on CNN as we're scanning through, or not CNN, on ESPN. We have a reason now to stop on ESPN as we're scanning through the channels to try to catch some Tebow news. Saw some video of him. No, well, I won't stop on ESPN that often, my dear. She says, please don't. All right, I'll try and take it easy on that. But we're excited to have Tim Tebow back in the NFL. And at least a reason to watch football again. Because there's very little that's appealing to Americans of good conscience when it comes to the National Football League. There's just, in fact, let me go to this story from the Culture File. This is Dateline New York from Fox News there in New York. The NFL Players Association announced the launch of a line of LGBT pride shirts. Did you catch that? Yeah, they're gonna start selling lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered pride shirts from the NFL Players Association. They're doing the launch of the homo shirts in conjunction with LGBT Pride Month, which is the month of June. Were you aware of that, my dear? That June is LG. Since when was that? When did that become official? I thought June was the traditional wedding month of normal people. But, you know, the homos, they want everything. And they've gotten to the NFL Players Association. And I haven't seen any of the shirts and the fuchsia and the lavender or whatever. Football. I don't think there are any teams that have official colors that are either fuchsia, pink, or lavender. But who knows? By next season, we may see that. One Pride team shirt features the name and jersey number of an NFL player. So here, they've got a list of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 players who've agreed to have their names and numbers plastered on a homo T-shirt. And I read these names, I never heard of any of these guys. And Tim Tebow's name was not included. He has not. Of course, He wasn't officially associated with the league, I'm sure, when this all happened. What is the goal of the NFL Players Association with this disgusting and foul and vile line of homosexual T-shirts? They say their goal is to raise awareness. Why do you want to raise awareness about what those people do? The less aware we are of it, the better, in my opinion. But I have a quote from Chris Cluey, he's a punter for the Oakland Raiders. That's the very bottom of the food chain in the NFL. The punter for the Oakland Raiders is the lowest form of life in the NFL. And here's what Cluey has to say. He says, quote, "I am extremely proud to be a part of this collaboration between Athlete Ally and the NFL Players Association, one team shop to raise awareness both of Pride Month and the issue of tolerance and respect within the NFL itself. As players, we are role models to a wide variety of people." Could I say peoples? Just so I could get some more S's in there. Unquote. That's Chris Cluey, punter and bottom feeder and deceiver of young people there at the Oakland Raiders. That's the only quote they had from an NFL player. Everybody else is pretty much staying in the shadows on this one. All net proceeds from the sale of these T-shirts will go to fight homophobia in sports. That's just great. That's good to know. Athlete Ally is a proud partner of the NFL Players Association, and it makes clear to all its players that union supporters that the union supports and welcomes them regardless of their sexual orientation. Well, except maybe for those straights. Those guys are just so judgmental. Straights. So there's the NFL for you. It's a shame to have Mr. Tebow associated with that. I think he has to join this NFL Players Association in order to get on the roster there at the New England Patriots. And it's just a shame. We just hope we won't be seeing Mr. Tebow's new number 5 jersey there at the Athlete Ally Homo Promotion Fest there at the NFL Players Association. Now let's move on to a direct assault upon the children of America. I'm just about fed up, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm on the verge of plotting some kind of revolution or act of revolt against what's going on in the attack against young children, girls especially in America. Breitbart.com had a headline, "Third graders introduce the president." And, you know, that's got to be exciting for a third grader, no matter who the president is, to have an opportunity to introduce the president. Well, when you open up the video link, it turns out that there's 2 9-year-old twins, and they're introducing Barry at the White House Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender Pride Month celebration this past Thursday. And there was a video link. I'll link to it on the blog there, and you can see this act of child abuse carried out by the President of the United States. Right there on TV in front of God and everybody with no shame, he has 9-year-old girls introducing the president and talking about how wonderful their lesbian mommies are. It's absolutely disgusting. The president should be arrested for this. Anyone associated with putting these 9-year-old girls on camera praising deviant lifestyles should be arrested and prosecuted to the full extent of the law. And now from the last straw file, this is from The Guardian over in London. You have to go overseas to get any real news these days. But Obama's administration is allowing the Plan B abortifacient morning after pill, for sale to anyone. According to The Guardian, the Obama administration will stop trying to limit sales of emergency contraception pills, making the morning after pill available to women of all ages without prescription. Now, I need The Guardian to clarify, and perhaps this is directly from the White House talking points, but what exactly does women of all ages mean? I mean, women are not of all ages. You have infants, toddlers, girls, adolescents, and then women. Women generally being 18, 20 years old or older, you know, old enough to move out of the house and make their own decisions. There's no such thing as women of all ages. What they should say here is they want to sell the morning after pill to young girls. But what they might want to say is that they what they really want to do is make the morning after pill available to everybody, including middle-aged men. I want to find out if it says women, but I'm wondering, can a man walk into Walgreens and buy a morning after pill without showing ID or anything like buying a bottle of Excedrin? Because if that's the case, then this is indeed a direct assault on everything that's good and right and just and holy, and especially upon the girls. And I have three young girls, so I take particular offense to this. The Guardian reports that the U.S. Justice Department said in a letter that it would withdraw its appeal on this matter. You remember I told you a few weeks ago when the Justice Department launched an appeal trying to restrict the sale of this pill that it was all for show. And now, that proves to be correct. On April 5th, Judge Edward Corman ordered the Plan B abortifacient to be available over the counter to girls of all ages. Girls of all ages. All ages. Plan B, one step, the manufacturer, Teva Pharmaceuticals. We got to find out where they're headquartered. Teva Pharmaceutical Industries. They say they want to make the pill available without a prescription to girls as young as 15. And now the government and the FDA has just said, look, let's just sell it like candy over the counter. That way, 13-year-olds can get it, 15-year-olds can get it, 45-year-olds can get it for the teenage girl that they've molested. Unbelievable. An assault on my daughters, folks. The fact that some deviant pervert can go into the store and buy this pill and then force a young girl to take it after he defiles her, it makes my blood boil, and it makes me want to take some kind of drastic action against these deviant perverts hell-bent on harming my children. Anything else? Oh, Ann Tomino, lead plaintiff and co-coordinator for the National Women's Liberation, whatever that is. She said, this decision by the administration affirms what feminists have been fighting for all along. The morning after pill should be made available to females of all ages on the shelf of any convenience store, just like aspirin or condoms. Unquote. Yeah, that was one of the women fighting so that perverts could buy abortifacients and continuing molesting our children. And I'm telling you, folks, this is just about, for me, it's just about the last straw. I'm Doug McBurney, and I'm not sure what I'm going to do if I'm walking through the grocery store or the drugstore and I see these pills on the shelf. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to control myself. I'm very upset with this. And I know you could say, well, Doug, the pill's been available to deviants and perverts this whole time, ever since it was created and released for sale without prescription. It's been available for the rapists amongst us, and I understand that. It's just that seeing this news article really brought home to me the concerted effort on behalf of the enemies of my children to corrupt them. And I'm not sure how much longer I can sit on the sidelines and not do something dramatic to draw attention to the fact that there are still fathers in this country. It's Father's Day, by the way. And there are still fathers in this country who are willing to stand up and fight to protect our children. And, you'll probably hear more from me on this in the not-too-distant future, I can assure you. All right, now let's go to something a little less of an existential immediate threat. Let's go to the White House. into the politics file, I have a list here from the Washington Post of people in the media who are married and or fornicating and or shacking up and or related somehow to people in the White House. I wasn't aware of the ties that bind, so to speak, but ABC News president Ben Sherwood, he's the brother of Elizabeth Sherwood Randall, who's a national security advisor to Barry Ho. And then the president of CBS News, David Rhodes, he's the brother of Ben Rhodes, who's a foreign policy specialist in the aforementioned Barry Ho White House. CNN's deputy Washington bureau chief, Virginia Moseley, is married to Tom Nides, who until earlier this year was deputy secretary of state under Hillary Rodham Clinton. And Jay Carney's wife is Claire Shipman, a veteran reporter. I'm sure Claire Shipman likes to have her name reported that way. A veteran reporter. You know what that means, Claire? It means you're getting a bit long in the tooth for television news. But hey, you're married to Jay Carney, who's the White House spokesmouth. It doesn't end there. NPR's White House correspondent, Ari Shapiro, is married to Michael Gottlieb, who's in the White House counsel's office. You know, this brings to mind the warning from Michael Savage on his radio show 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Beware the government media complex. Indeed, it's like feudal Europe, where families intermarried in order to consolidate and preserve their power. It's happening right here in America, which is supposedly a constitutional republic, but it looks like a feudal fiefdom, frankly. Wow, that's three F's in a row. How about that? Yeah. So there, and this will become more apparent. We'll tie some of these together in some stories as we go forward. As we delve into the poly spy file. Yeah, this was the politics file, and then I had a spy file because of all the spy news, and I've combined them into the poly spy file, and we're going to talk about Edward Snowden. I'll just give you my opinion, and I'll try to make a case for why I think Mr. Snowden is a common spy, a traitor. He should be hunted down, arrested, incarcerated, and prosecuted to the full extent of the law. That's what I think about Mr. Snowden, okay? And I know there have been hosts, several conservative talk show hosts over the past week, who have referred to Mr. Snowden as a hero. Not the least of which is one Michael Savage, who stands to be, well, fairly embarrassed when all the truth comes out about this creep, this little punk. According to the Associated Press, Snowden walked out of work where he was a contractor, analyst for the National Security Agency. He walked out of work with some of America's biggest secrets on a thumb drive in his pocket. Investigators know how many documents he downloaded. They know what servers he took them from. Snowden worked for a contractor called Booz Allen Hamilton, apparently bringing barely post-high school analysts into the NSA and giving them access to data, lots of data, apparently. Snowden was only on the job for around 4 weeks when he told his employers he was ill and he requested leave without pay. He said he was suffering from epilepsy, needed some time off. And when he failed to return, government agents spent several days in the field trying to find him, and the government didn't even know Snowden was the source of the leaked secrets until he admitted it to a homosexual reporter over at The Guardian in London. And he went public, and then he went to China, or maybe not in that order. He went to China, and then he went public with these secrets. And I know some of you are quite upset to think that the government might be able to monitor all of our phone calls, able to monitor our emails, our downloads, our Facebook posts, all of that. I think that the government should have the authority to make records so that when things occur, they can catch guilty people. The problem is not that the government has the ability to spy and exercises that power. The problem is the government is full of criminal, suicidal, ignorant murderers. That's the problem. It's the people in the government. It's not the power of the government. I want to talk a little bit about, let's see here. For those of you who are shocked and dismayed by this PRISM story and Mr. Snowden and all he has alleged, and what he has done, ladies and gentlemen, is in his effort to aggrandize himself. Remember, he went public and put his mug on TV so that he could see himself looking back at himself when he watched TV and, I don't know, impress chicks, maybe? Maybe impress other guys at this point. I don't know. We'll find out more about Mr. Snowden. But when you want to expose criminality in the government or something that you suspect is unconstitutional or criminal, you don't go to a homosexual reporter in England and then go to China and then go public. There are ways to do it. There are still a few people in the government who he could have gone to let his concerns be known without disclosing the nature of America's intelligence gathering mechanisms. That is a crime. That is treason, in my opinion, and I think this punk is a traitor. And then there's my reasoning. He could have gone about this in a different way, but he didn't. And so he's a traitor. But do you folks remember Echelon? I remember when I first went on. I don't know if you call it the air. When I first went on the ether back in the late 90s, started doing this broadcast, I remember hearing about Echelon. Well, Echelon, this is late 90s. Analysts used a computer program that scanned the communications of everyone for keywords. One former Echelon analyst said they're listening to everything. They know what everybody does. The European Parliament, if you'll remember, published a report on Echelon back in 2001. Describing it as a global system for the interception of private and commercial communications. Margaret Neusham exposed her work with Echelon at top secret hearings in Congress in 1988 and then to a journalist in 1999. So 1999 is approximately when I realized that the government they're recording everything. They have the ability to look at everything. And I don't remember if I was, I was probably shocked by it back in 1999. But in 2013, I'm certainly not shocked by it. In the era of a global terrorism threat, I don't know why anyone would be surprised that this kind of thing is going on. Now, if there is indeed criminal activity by the government that's exposed, well, we should know about that, and those criminals should be punished. But Mr. Snowden should not be hailed as a hero. He's a traitor, and he should be arrested. Anyway, so Echelon, all right, I already heard about all this. This is why I don't understand why this is such a big story. Everybody's focused on this big story, and I thought we all knew this was going on a decade and a half ago. But I guess we all didn't know, or maybe everybody's got short-term memory loss except me. I don't know. All right. From CNET, the NSA say they're admitting to listening to U.S. phone calls without warrants. The National Security Agency, according to CNET, has acknowledged in a new classified briefing that it does not need court authorization to listen to domestic phone calls. Gerald Nadler announced this. He says he was told that the contents of a phone call could be accessed simply based on an analyst's decision to do so. And Nadler said, "I was rather startled to hear that." Well, Nadler, where have you been, man? I mean, where were you in 1999? I was sitting here in Denver, Colorado with a real job, and I knew what was going on. And I simply assumed that as technology has advanced, that the ability of governments and various government agencies to gather information has become as much more sophisticated as the internet itself and as data communications has become over the last 15 or 20 years. I assume that the intelligence agencies are keeping pace with the exponential increase in the sophistication of communications and that they're watching everything, they're recording everything. I always assume that. Nadler's disclosure indicates the NSA analyst could also access the contents of internet communications without going before a court and seeking approval. And, well, so it's all been fairly obvious to me, ladies and gentlemen. And I made the decision years ago that probably everything I say and everything I post and everything I type, well, there's a record of it somewhere. So if I ever commit a crime, that crime could be tied to me. Or if I was actively engaged in some kind of plot to do something dangerous or violent, that perhaps the government, justice officials, could step in and stop me. I just assumed that was the case, but everyone else is apparently quite shocked by this. And well, I'm just not that shocked. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. So glad to have you aboard on this shocking episode of the Weekly World View. I'll tell you what's shocking to me about this whole thing is that is this story I found from Investor's Business Daily. The White House, they say, assures that tracking our every phone call and keystroke is to stop terrorists, and yet it won't snoop on mosques where the terrorists are. That's right. The government surveillance that we've all been reading about excludes mosques. Yeah, since October 2011, mosques have been off limits to FBI agents without high-level approval from an outfit in the Justice Department called the Sensitive Operations Review Committee. Yeah. And Investors Daily asks, who makes up this body, this Sensitive Operations Review Committee? Well, nobody knows. Its members and staff are kept secret. And the one thing that they will not look at and they will not monitor is mosques. So therein, to me, is a problem. If they're going to be snooping and making a record of everything, and if they're going to be checking on things, well, ostensibly it's to protect us from terrorists. Well, how about setting up the microphones in the mosques there? Monitor those internet communications. Well, this panel, the Sensitive Operations Committee at the Justice Department, was set up under pressure from Islamist groups. Just months before the panel's formation, the Council on American Islamic Relations teamed up with the ACLU to sue the FBI for violating the civil rights of Muslims, spying on their mosques. Well, before mosques were excluded, the FBI launched dozens of successful sting operations against homegrown jihadists inside mosques and disrupted dozens of plots against the homeland. And apparently we're going to hear about some of these in the weeks to come. My guess is the one thing in our favor, ladies and gentlemen, is that the government is filled with incompetent boobs who are hired more because of who they're married to, who their brother-in-law is, and a patronage hiring, and they're generally incompetent and probably not very effective in their spying apparatus. So we can hope that they're just incompetent. But apparently, if you're a Christian or a patriot or you're a member of a Tea Party group or in any way opposed to the policies of this administration, apparently the crack staff looks at your stuff, and that would be my stuff too. I just hope to keep one step ahead of them. And, you know, when they circle in on me, I hope to escape via helicopter or something like that. We got more from the Poly Spy file. According to a civil liberties attorney, and WorldNet Daily is reporting that the FBI and the Secret Service are showing up at people's houses, veterans' houses, to request interviews to question specific internet posts that veterans have placed on websites such as Facebook. This is according to an attorney at the Rutherford Institute, John Whitehead. He told WND that credible sources within the NSA have told him that they're downloading a trillion communications on the internet per month, including posts to various websites, emails, instant messaging communications, and texting messages. Marine veteran Brandon Robb was arrested by FBI and Secret Service agents for comments he made on Facebook expressing dissatisfaction with the present direction of the U.S. government. Whitehead says his office has received numerous calls from military veterans returning from the wars with reports that they're being visited by the FBI and the Secret Service to ask questions about their internet postings. He says the Secret Service or the FBI, they're getting psychiatrists to visit with the veteran in question for 10 or 15 minutes in their jail cell in order to acquire enough information to certify in front of a judge that the person should be placed in a civil commitment. They should be committed to a mental institution because of some psychological problem. The executive director of the United States Justice Foundation says that veterans have been getting letters from the VA informing them that they've been declared mentally incompetent. Why? Well, because they've posted things against Barry Ho and his administration and the Leninist Marxists who have taken over the government over the past 20 years slowly. Yeah, it didn't all happen with Barry. Barry's just the culmination. Of all of it. By the way, folks, you may not have known this. According to the Brady Handgun Violence Protection Act, any person receiving a determination of incompetency, that's mental instability, psychological problems, they can be prevented from purchasing, receiving, owning, or transporting a firearm or ammunition. So, folks, if this is true, what the Rutherford Institute is alleging here, and the attorney there, John Whitehead, if this is true, this is criminal behavior. This is the government abusing powers that I really don't have a problem that the government has these powers. But if it comes out that they're abusing these powers, then this is a criminal act and they should be investigated, arrested, prosecuted to the full extent of the law, all of that. But the government keeping a record of everything is not a crime. And I thought we all knew this 20 years ago, but apparently not. You know, when a criminal government, criminals in the government, are keeping records, well, the morality of the whole thing becomes legitimately questionable. And this lack of trust, this loss of faith between a people and their rulers, it will destroy a civilization. It will lead to strife if that government is not peacefully removed. And I'm just not sure that we have people in the government. Well, I know that we don't have anyone in the Justice Department who's willing to ferret out the criminals and get rid of them. Because the entire Justice Department needs to be ferreted out, frankly. I don't know who we go to. Maybe Sheriff Joe down in Arizona. We just declare Sheriff Joe the king, the constitutional monarch, and let him sort these criminals out. Now, if Sheriff Joe was making a recording of everything, I was just in Phoenix for a couple of days, and if Sheriff Joe has a record of every keystroke I made and he has a recording of every phone call, I'm okay with that because I trust Sheriff Joe that he's only going to go after the bad guys. The problem is I don't trust these people at the NSA. I don't trust these people in the Justice Department. I don't trust these people in the FBI to do what's right with the information that I believe they have a rightful ability to gather. And therein lies the problem, folks. And so don't get all, don't freak out about the fact that there's a record of everything you do. That's not a crime. It's what the criminals are doing with it that's a crime. And if we, the people, are unable to pull ourselves together and find leaders who will prosecute and stop this abuse of power, well, then therein lies the problem. We shouldn't blind our intelligence-gathering agencies in order to retain our privacy and our anonymity. What we need to do is we need to elevate honorable men to leadership positions. Honorable men who can be trusted with the power of government. And keep in mind that the power of government is rightly the power over life and death. The power to impose justice upon the wicked and selfish masses. The government has that legitimate power. So to say that the government has the right to execute justice upon people, but they don't have a right to keep a record of everything, well, I think that's schizophrenic. But I'm open to debate on all this stuff, I suppose. We'll see how this all shakes out. One more from the Poly Spy File. Really getting deep into it this week. A cybersecurity firm hired by CBS News, according to the Washington Post, has determined through forensic analysis that reporter Cheryl Atkinson's computer was accessed by an unauthorized, external, unknown party on multiple occasions late in 2012. The intruder executed commands that appeared to involve searching and exfiltration of data. So someone broke into her computer, looked at her files, and even copied a bunch of her files. Cheryl Atkinson at the time was reporting on the Benghazi massacre and the lies and the cover-ups coming out of the White House at the time. CBS News say they are taking steps to identify the responsible party, and they say they're working hard to find out exactly what's going on. That's CBS News. Well, I mean, why not have David call his brother Ben to find out what's happening? If CBS wants to know what's going on, I mean, have David call Ben. Maybe he can shed some light on what was going on with the White House spying on Cheryl Atkinson. Now, if the White House is spying on Cheryl Atkinson in order to discredit her or to try to debunk her reportage on the Benghazi affair, that's a criminal act. Taking that information and using it for nefarious purposes is a criminal act, and there's a whole White House full of criminals who frankly should be let out of the White House on a perp walk if there was anyone with any stones left in the country, in the government, I should say. And unfortunately, we don't have any of those. So Barry, in his latest effort to distract from what I think is the underlying terrifying factor in his presidency, which is where was he on the night of September 11th, 2012, and what was going on that prevented him from trying to rescue Americans under fire in Benghazi. That's what Barry's really worried about, I'm convinced of it. And now, in a distractive mode, Barry has concluded that Bashar Assad of Syria has used chemical weapons against the rebels seeking to overthrow him, and he has decided to supply military support to the rebels. The White House announced that last week. In terms of further response, the brother of the CBS president said in a statement, he said, "We will make decisions on arming the rebels on our own timeline." And the reason he says that is because, well, we've already been arming the rebels for a couple of years. And so now, in order to cover up the fact that we've already been shipping weapons to these Islamists trying to overthrow that rat weasel, Bashar Assad, that little weasel. You know that guy would sell his mother into slavery just to preserve his own comfort. And but you got a bunch of Islamists trying to overthrow him. You've got an Islamic revolution happening in the Middle East, and Barry Ho's in the middle of it, selling guns to people who eventually will turn them on us. And that's been going on for quite some time. I think that's related to Benghazi. I think that's a legitimate question. And I think once the dust settles there in Syria, Barry's hoping that that dust will cover the tracks of him and his troika of girls who run the country and Ambassador Stevens and what they were up to over there in Libya. So there, we're going to go to war in Libya now, or not in Libya, I'm sorry, in Syria, or at least we're going to arm the Islamists there. That way people will not, you know, there'd be so much confusion. It'll be really hard to sort out what happened at Benghazi because we'll all be focused on what's happening over there in Syria. Now, Iran has responded. I've got a story from The Independent in the United Kingdom. Iran says they're going to send 4,000 Iranian Revolutionary Guards. And now America finds itself in the middle of the Shia-Sunni war that's been going on. They say it dates back to the 7th century when there was some argument over who was supposed to take over from the Prophet Muhammad when he perished. Okay, I don't want to get into all of this. But apparently this idea that there are weapons of mass destruction, you know, apparently, you know, that the leftists are willing to go with that, even though, if I remember correctly, that didn't really work out so good for George W. Bush. Listening to that particular clip of that song, would you assume that anyone associated with that particular recording was straight and normal? It was the 80s, yeah. That was when androgyny started to creep in. You remember the whole culture club thing? And that was all very disgusting. And whoever that was, well, that particular voice,
that was the thing.
I don't want to go into that voice. But that particular vocal styling in the 80s, me and my friends, whenever you heard that particular vocal styling, well, there's one thing you knew is that was homo music. And we didn't allow that. We didn't allow that in our car. We didn't allow it in the barracks. We didn't go to clubs that played that kind of stuff. And there was like 10 bands who had that same vocal effect. Anyway. All right. Now let's return from the nebulous poly spy and war files. We'll get to the more immediate and existential dangers that we have to review for you here. From the domestic tranquility file, a mother and a grandmother, a team of caretakers, had been pleading for financial help to remove their son, their autistic 14-year-old son, from a medical center in Chicago. They claimed he was being neglected and abused. An anonymous donor gave them the funds that allowed the mother and grandmother to take their 14-year-old autistic son, Alex, out of this institution. And she wrote in a March blog post that she would make sure Alex received appropriate medical attention. That's the mother. She posted on a blog site. Less than 3 months later, Alex's mother grabbed a kitchen knife and stabbed the teenage boy multiple times in the chest as he laid in bed. Once Alex was dead, the mom handed the knife to the boy's grandmother, who used it to kill the family cat. The family cat. And then the two women apparently killed themselves. I couldn't tell from this story if these two women succeeded in killing themselves or did not. Because the story was just unclear, but I think they killed themselves as well. A suicide note, according to this article from the Daily Mail, said that the woman killed the cat because they did not want the cat to go to a shelter. This is after butchering their 14-year-old son and grandson in the greater Chicago area. More from the domestic tranquility file. I've just got a series of headlines. From Chicago, 7 dead, 30 wounded in weekend violence. From New York, 5 people shot in the Bronx, Staten Islands, and Queens in a 21-minute span over the Father's Day weekend. And I know those are big cities, and it's, you know, New York and Chicago. We all know that. The final headline from the domestic tranquility file. Omaha, Nebraska suffered a rash of shootings in less than 1 hour. The shootings all took place in South Omaha on the same day the city kicked off the College World Series. A spate of shootings in less than an hour left three people dead in Omaha, Nebraska. Omaha, Nebraska, for crying out loud. Now competing with New York and Chicago, who have eclipsed Baghdad and Benghazi as some of the most violent places on the planet. Unbelievable. What's happened to our country? The lawyers have taken over. They've told us we have to tolerate crime so that they can make a really good living processing the criminals. And now we have an epidemic of violence and bloodshed that should be shocking and appalling to everyone every day. But, well, we become numb to it after a while because you only have the capacity for so much compassion and so much shock and so much revulsion. And eventually, well, it just all starts to run together. All right, now let's go to the politics file. Let's get to the root of this problem. The root of all these problems. The chairman of the Republican National Committee, speaking of the root of all evil, is urging religious conservatives to support the GOP's plans to expand the party. Now, I have a quote from the chairman, Mr. Reince Priebus. He said this with a straight face in front of God and everybody. He said the following words. He said, "I would ask that we come together and that we pray for the future of this country." Yeah, and he said, "I'm a Christian. I'm a believer. God lives in my heart, and I'm for changing minds, not changing values." He said this at the Fake and Pretty Dumb Coalition. I'm sorry, the Faith and Freedom Coalition, which I've dubbed the Fake and Pretty Dumb Coalition, because the leadership who's up on the dais giving these outrageous speeches and lies are fake, and anyone who pays money to attend is pretty dumb. So it's the Fake and Pretty Dumb Coalition, not the Faith and Freedom Coalition. He made his comments there. What is the RNC's plan for growth, as written up by Reince Priebus and his minions? They call for more tolerant attitudes on immigration and social issues, such as abortion and gay marriage. Yeah. So after Priebus said that he was a Christian, a believer, and that God lives in his heart, he said, if we don't change our stands on abortion and homosexual marriage, if we don't, we will limit our ability to attract young people and others, including many women, who agree with us on some issues, but not all issues, said Reince. So Reince is willing to give up on the big issues, you know, like the killing of innocent people, the law and order, things like that. He's willing to give up on that so he can attract a few of the nose-pierced, tattooed young chicks who he thinks are going to save the country. Reince, you should be run out of town on a rail. Unbelievable. This guy's in charge of the Republican Party. It's just unbelievable. All right. Well, that's all I got on Reince and the GOP and the Fake and Pretty Dumb Coalition. I believe that's led by Ralph Reed, who's about as fake and pretty dumb as it comes. Now let's go to the personhood file. The aforementioned GOP has approved legislation that would ban almost all abortions after the fetus reaches the age of 20 weeks. So you've already got two qualifiers there. Almost all past 20 weeks. So they want to regulate the killing of innocent people. That's their solution. And that's why people of good conscience, normal Americans, have a hard time taking the Republican Party seriously and having any belief that the Republican Party can restore anything that's gone wrong in this country when their first the first thing they tell us they're going to do is they're going to regulate the murder of innocent people. The measure will give House conservatives, that's right, your representatives there, GOP representatives in the House, will have a chance to reaffirm their social credentials. And you know what that means. It's time for them to bamboozle the Christians and come out with an abortion regulation and call themselves pro-life. The bill is named the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, and it could get a vote in the whole House as early as next week. House Republican leaders, according to the Associated Press, have largely avoided contentious social issues such as abortion. But these ostensibly so-called anti-abortion conservatives have been spurred by the recent conviction of a Philadelphia abortion provider, abortionist Kermit Gosnell for killing three babies in his clinic. Well, that's all they could convict him on. It's the other murders were well regulated within the regulations that the allegedly pro-life Republicans have talked us into. Anyway, it says here, anti-abortion conservatives have been spurred by the recent conviction of Gosnell. They should replace spurred by with fundraising on. Anti-abortion conservatives have been fundraising on the recent conviction of Philly abortion provider Kermit Gosnell, yada, 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 yada. So now it's time for them to introduce a bill. The sponsor is a Republican from Arizona, and he argues that there's evidence that fetuses can feel pain after 5 months, justifying a ban on later abortions. Now, a federal court has already overturned a 20-week abortion ban in Arizona. Nine other states have enacted similar bans and now face court challenges, which proves that this is the Republicans once again fiddling and fundraising while Rome burns around them and children are being butchered. And all they can do is call for a well-regulated scheme for the murder of innocent people. The state laws are based on a National Right to Life Committee model. They say that babies can experience pain, and therefore it's good for us to fundraise on this issue and introduce better regulations when it comes to killing children. That's National Right to Life Committee's stance. We want better regulated murder. NARAL, Pro-Choice America president, she says this is a campaign to spur a Supreme Court case that will dismantle the protections established by Roe v. Wade, the 1973 Supreme Court decision that made most abortions legal. Most? Are there any abortions that Roe v. Wade didn't make legal? All abortions, even infanticide, I think, can be supported with the Roe v. Wade model. The bill, according to the Associated Press, the Republican's bill, does provide for an exception to save a pregnant woman if her life is endangered by the pregnancy. So, well, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but there's just no such thing. But, in one slightly hopeful note, Republicans rejected Democrat amendments to expand those exceptions to include rape and incest. So, maybe we're making some progress with these fools. I guess I'll take it, because I'm desperate for some optimistic news. But probably so they can send fundraising letters to people who've supported personhood and say, see, we don't support exceptions for rape and incest. We only support exceptions for babies who are under 20 weeks old. That's our form of regulating the murder of innocent people. And please send your check to the Republican National Committee. All right, we're almost out of time. In fact, I'm going long, and I wasn't supposed to do that tonight. Roger Ailes, the Fox News chairman, said in remarks while accepting an award last week, he said, I would like to know what the commander-in-chief was doing on the night of September 11th, 2012. Well, nice. Nice to have you on board, Roger. He says it's an important story because it involves our military ethos, which says that if we ask you to go out and risk your life for America, we will back you up. Okay. And we'll try to get you out if it's humanly possible. In Benghazi, we did not do that, says Roger Ailes. Maybe more people will start paying attention because Roger Ailes has now stepped up and said something. From the Washington Times, 9 months after the Benghazi massacre, the who and the why of the terrorist assault that left four Americans dead is shrouded in mystery. The FBI says they're investigating, but no arrests have been made, and only one suspect has been interrogated, and he has since been released from custody. The FBI has settled on a broad conclusion regarding Benghazi. They say the attacks were carried out by a combination of Ansar al-Sharia and the Muhammad Jamal Network and Islamic Jihad. I'm sorry, not Islamic Jihad. Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb. That the FBI says this is the group who we think did it. Among the most vexing aspects of the investigation is that none of the three groups named by the FBI and suspected in involvement has claimed responsibility. Well, that would indicate to me that someone else was in charge. Maybe someone from Washington. Maybe eventually Barry's girl troika there, who are actually running the country, that maybe they'll claim responsibility. Or maybe it'll just come out that they were the ones responsible for what happened in Benghazi. All right, NYU is kicking Chen Guan Chen off campus. You remember he's been there since May of 2012 when he made a dramatic escape from oppression in China. But now school officials have told him to get out by the end of this month. Chen's a pro-life activist, by the way, from China. Chen's presence at the school, NYU, apparently is not sitting well with China bureaucrats who signed off on the permits for NYU's expansion into China. NYU setting up their racket to bilk parents out of tens of thousands of dollars and give their children worthless educations. They're setting up shop in China, and they don't want to offend the masters there. They've been working closely with China to establish a university over there in China, NYU. If we want something to hold back and restrain the Chinese tiger, start sending their kids to NYU, right? They'll all come out of there pierced with various venereal diseases, and they'll all want to go into film, women's studies, Afrocentric studies, and we won't have to worry about the Chinese taking over the world. Chen is currently in discussions to move to another school. I think he needs to talk to King's College, and I forget the name of that other conservative college in Michigan. But anyway, he says he might go to Fordham Law School, but I would recommend the King's College in New York. Or I can't think of the other name of that, but that's all right. We're running out of time here. I've got a quote here regarding this Chen story. An NYU professor said, quote, "Apart from the initial press hoopla, Chen really hasn't had any kind of profile at NYU this year. Normally, someone like him," said the professor, "would have been doing seminars. He would have been doing panel discussions. He would have been quite celebrated and active on the campus, but he's been relatively invisible," according to a professor there at NYU, kind of like Tim Tebow in New York. It's like they were hiding him out. They've been hiding Chen in the basement at NYU, afraid to offend anyone. All right, I'm running out of time. I can't do all. I got these interesting stories, but I'm out of time. So we'll go to the science, really? File. Yeah, the science, really? File. Some professors are going to have themselves cryogenically preserved. Yeah, these three, they are members of the Future of Humanity Institute. They're going to have their heads and or their bodies frozen so that they can be, well, what do they say here? Nitrogen gas is used to reduce their temperature. The patient is then cooled down and then placed in a vat of liquid nitrogen. These three professors say that they want to be stored until technology advances far enough to revive them. Hey, you geniuses, the technology already exists, and it's been obvious to anyone with half a brain for about 2,000 years, but you won't see it, and so you're going to become Christ. Yeah, I'm talking about salvation through Jesus Christ and a resurrection of the dead. It's been available, and it's obvious to everyone except various professors and godless heathens, but the technology exists. I encourage everyone to take advantage of it. Finally, from the science, really, file. This is real science. Google has launched internet balloons at a launch in Christchurch, New Zealand. The first public balloon release occurred and is the beginning of Google's plans to build a ring of balloons that would fly around the globe at twice the altitude of an airplane and send high-speed internet to the earth below. It could solve the problem of internet access worldwide. But I think that's pretty cool. I mean, I know Google's full of weirdos and creeps, but hey, they got good technology. They say that the balloons could also be used after a natural disaster like an earthquake when communication systems shut down. Well, that's pretty cool. Finally, from Los Angeles, an in-your-face Emmy nomination and award Kevin Clash, the Elmo puppeteer from Sesame Street, who resigned amid allegations that he molested underage boys, has won 3 Daytime Emmy Awards for his work on Sesame Street. He has resigned. And, of course, he claims that all these files, all these lawsuits filed against him are without merit. But there's a big question in the public mind that this guy might be a child molester. So what does the board of the Emmy Awards do? They give him 3 Emmys. In your face to normal America again. And that's it, folks. I'm out of here. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, American Right to Life, and as always, my other brother, Darrell, who makes it all happen. Here at the Weekly Worldview Studios, should the Lord tarry, I will return, well, not for a couple weeks, because my wife and I are running off for our anniversary, and we're going on vacation, so I'll be gone for a couple of weeks, and I hope you're going to be okay, folks. But until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.